Holding on page 9 of Bays, about a third of the way down the Almud, the line begins, Eidah Chadidri. Okay, so we discussed, the Mishnah had given us two scenarios. One is where you have two gittim, one next to the other. You have two Eidim signed in Ivrit style and two in Yevani style, which we discussed yesterday, the possibility, does that actually mean they're writing in Hebrew characters, but they're writing in Greek style, where Reuben ben Yaakov really means Yaakov, who is the son of Reuben. It means Reuben has a son who is Yaakov, basically. Or does it mean that instead of Ben you're writing Benoy, or does it mean like the Rambam that you're actually writing in a left-to-right script like Greek or English? Anyway, we said you had the scenario where you had two Gittim then, and two Eidim Ivrim under the first going across under the first two Gittim, and two Eidim Yevanim also going across. We said that only the one across both sides. We said only the one top Eidim can be read with, meaning if the Hebrew ones are on top, then the right hand side yet is good, the left hand one side is not, and if not, then not. And we ended up saying the reason is because maybe Gundel is chossing, because maybe the later Eidim are following after what the original ones did. So Rashi has the scenario. If you look back on Amud Aleph, there's a diagram in Rashi that shows how he understands the situation to have been. So there's the two gittim, Bekach LeYerach and Bekach LeYerach. You have, the one he's showing over here is actually where the Ivri and Yevani ones are mixed up, which is actually the next case of the Mishnah, which is what the Gemara is going to be discussing now. The case where you have Ivri, Yevani is straightforward. You just have two Eidim Ivrim, one after the other, and then two Eidim Yevani, one below the other. One below the other. So the Mishnah then talks about there's four altogether, two Eidim Ivrim, Reuben ben Yaakov, Yosef ben Shimon in Ivri, and then you have two Yevani ones, where again, according to Rashi, the Yevani ones are written exactly the same way as the Hebrew, but they have the exact opposite meanings. Reuben ben Yaakov means Reuben has a son Yaakov, and so forth. So then we said that in that case, you look only at the top two, whichever get those top two go with. So if the top two signatures are Hebrew, then both Gittim are in Hebrew, let's assume. But the one on the right-hand side, because Hebrew runs from right to left, is the one that has two Eidim on it, because we have to be concerned. Gundelis Chasim, what if, for example, the two Yevani Eidim underneath it, what if they signed going in the same way as the Eidim Ivrim? Meaning not they're not writing the letters backwards or something, but what they're doing is, for example, if the Eidim above him writes Reuven ben Yaakov Eid, meaning Reuven, the son of Yaakov, then the Yevani guy may go. His name is also Reuven ben Yaakov, let's say. He may instead feel that he should write the same way. My first name should be under his first name. My father's name should be under his father's name. So therefore, instead of writing Yaakov ben Reuven, which would mean that he's Reuven, the son of Yaakov, in his language, he instead writes it the other way around, Reuven ben Yaakov, exactly the same way as the guy above him, and then it's possible because that's not him, the wrong person. Not that the signature is not valid, sorry. No, it's not that the signature is not valid in that case. It's rather, though, he's putting his personal name. Again, let's assume the Ivri and the Yevani, let's say all four of them are named Reuven ben Yaakov. So what do you have? The two Eidim Ivrim are writing Reuven ben Yaakov. The two Eidim Yevonim are also writing Reuven ben Yaakov, but again, in their language, the proper way to write it would be Yaakov ben Reuven. Instead, they're going to write Gundelis. They're going to write backwards to match the signatures above them. Actually, Meiri says that Gundelis means like a copycat. So therefore, they're going to also not mirror. In other words, but again, they're also going to write Yaakov ben Reuven. Because their own name is Reuven. However, it's going to come out then that Reuven is going to be Reuven is going to be under the right hand get. So all four signatures are on the right hand get, and none on the left hand get. Therefore the second get would be possible because there's no Eidim on it. Right. Now then, the Mishnah talked about the next case, Eidach of Ivri, the Eidach of Yevani, where the Eidim are interleaved, an Ivri a Yevani, an Ivri a Yevani. So now Rashi and Tosfos disagree. Rashi and Tosfos disagree on what the scenario is. So now here's where, if you look at Amar Aleph in Rashi's diagram, you'll see how Rashi understands the second case. So he understands like this: you have the first Eid is written normally, Reuven ben Yaakov, and that one is written in Hebrew. The second one, then Yosef. The second one where he writes Yosef ben Shimon, where again in his language, Yosef ben Shimon really means the other way around. It means Yosef who has a son, Shimon. So what he does, it means the equivalent of Shimon and Yosef, right? What he actually does is he writes the name Yosef, which is meant to represent his father's name, under the name Yaakov, that was left over from the Ivri signature. And then he continues his own signature, which the Ben Shimon, which is actually contained in his name, on the third line. So you see, the first half of the second line is blank. You have Yosef Ben Shimon, where again, what does that mean? It means Shimon. You can see, you have the same diagram as me. You have his signature is running from the second to the third line. So that he's writing Yosef Ben Shimon, again, meaning really Shimon Ben Yosef, as we would usually put it, but he has it going from the second line to the third line. Then the Ivri aide comes after him and continues and does the same thing. He puts Kohos Ben Levi, and he puts Kohos, which is his personal name. So unlike in the Yuvani signature, Yosef is his father's name. Here, Kohos is his own name. But basically, since that's what the guy before him did, he started on the second line and continued on the third line, and that's what the next aide does as well. He starts on the third line, continues on the fourth line, and then the aide Yuvani is saying, okay, look, you put your first name Kohos at the end of the line. Fine, I'm going to put my first name Naphtali. I have Yachzel ben Naphtali, where really I'm Naphtali ben Yachzel. I'm going to put Naphtali at the bottom of the end of the line, and then Yachzel ben will be on the same line as it. So that's how Rashi understands the scenario. Tosfos has some difficulty with that. Tosfos actually ends up having a different Gusa in the Gemara. And Tosfos rather explains that now you don't need that complicated scenario where some of them are starting in the middle of the line and some of them are starting at the beginning of the line. You just have the two aides. You just have Ivri Yuvani. But all of them are going as they usually would, all across the page on one single line. Anyway, so now the question is similar to yesterday. But Liskashahai, why are we saying that both Gittin apostles, the Liskashahai, the Edech of Ivri, Edech of Yuvani? Why don't we say that it's good enough? Okay, each get has two edim. You have four signatures altogether. Let's say that each get is kosher with one Ivri and one Yuvani. That's fine. The two edim don't have to sign in the same language. Jehotznan, Edech of Ivri, Edech of Yuvani, kosher. The next mission tells us that that's good. And again, the answer is Hatani Zahiri Shneim Shadim. Okay, Zahiri's version of a Braise, in fact, said that both of them are kosher for exactly that reason. And the Tana Didan, what does our Tana say differently? Why does he say they're both possible? Again, Dumal Gundalis Chosim, because again, we have to be concerned that they may have written Gundalis, they may have written backwards, they may have written to conform with the get with the signature above them. Then what you're going to wind up with is that you have three signatures on one get and one signature on the other, and you don't know which one is which. So if we look in Rashi's scenario, it could be then that Reuven and Yosef, it could be that Reuven ben Yaakov and Yosef ben Shimon, who's a Yuvani, who's really Shimon ben Yosef, and Kohos ben Levi are all meaning the side, or not Kohos ben Levi, let's say he started on the left side, we know he means to refer to the left get, but Yachzel ben Naphtali, maybe all three of them are referring to the right-hand get.
It would mean
Naphtali ben Yachzel, but the point is, we would say Reuven ben Yaakov is referring to the right-hand get because he started on the right side. Yosef ben Shimon is also referring to the right-hand get, so that's why he put Shimon, which is his personal name, on the right side. And Yachzel ben Naphtali would be also meaning for the right one because he started on the right side.
Yosef would write it on the left side.
Well, that's the thing. Yosef is his father's name because he's Yuvani. So therefore, you might have that Reuven and Yosef ben Shimon, which is really Shimon ben Yosef, and Yachzel ben Naphtali, which are really Naphtali ben Yachzel, might all be referring to the right-hand get. You have three signatures on that one, and only one on the left-hand one. Mm-hmm. Only Kohos ben Levi is unequivocally on the left-hand one. Or the other way around. You could argue the other way around. You could say that Yosef ben Shimon is referring to the left-hand get. That's why he started on the left side. Kohos ben Levi is also referring to that one. That's why he started on that side. And Yachzel ben Naphtali, well, since Naphtali is his first name, because he's Greek, so he's also started on the left side. So the only one now he's referring to the right side is Reuven ben Yaakov, who definitely started on the right side. He's an Ivri. So therefore, you can't be sure which get has two signatures on it.
One.
When they're split, so that's the thing. When you have the scenario like Rashi, you can't be sure which ones are referring to one get and which ones are referring to, and how many of them are referring to one and how many are referring to the other. It could be two and two, which would make both of them kosher, but it definitely can't be four and zero, like the previous case, okay? But it could be three and one. One is also no good. Again, Tosfos, who learns that who learns that you just have this, each signature is written on one line, some in Hebrew style, some in Greek style, or the Rambam, who learns that some of them are written right to left in a right to left language, and others in a left to right language, they can't learn the Gemara that way. That the problem would be that, and therefore Tosfos mentions a different gear set.
Why Tosfos says it's impossible to write it on just on two lines, like
not impossible, but not impossible, but Rashi himself has a problem with there was apparently an alternate version of the Gemara available in Rashi's time, which Tosfos is referring to also, and Rashi says that actually that if each one is signed on one line, then why are you worried about that the Eid Ivrim might be referring to the second get? There's no question then. The two Eidim Ivrim who are writing from right to left, there's no question they're referring to the right-hand get. That's what forces Rashi to say that we must be saying that one of the Eidim Ivrim actually started on the left and then continued on the right, similar to the way that the Yevani above him did it.
Because
otherwise, if everyone is signing in one line, then we know the two Eid and Ivrim are signing right to left, Reuven ben Yaakov and Kohath ben Levi. Why would we think any of them are trying to refer to this get when it's clear that they're starting on this side? Whereas if you have Kohath ben Levi, if Kohath writes here and continues ben Levi over here, then you could say maybe he's referring to the left-hand get. Yeah. Kohath would be doing that because he's following the Yevani who's above him, yeah.
Okay, I understand that. Okay. But where does take it that you cannot have two lines for one signature?
It's not that Tosfos is saying you can end for the other girsa of the Gemara. You don't have to say that the scenario is that it involves two lines. You rather they have a different girsa in the Mishnah and also in the Gemara. It's not that the signatures are going from under one get to the other. It's just you have that underneath these two gittim, not necessarily extending from one to the other. You have the four signatures one beneath the other, one, two, three, four. And therefore you don't need Rashi's whole scenario where one writes half his name on one line and half on the other. Okay, Mishnah says, yeah. Mishnah says, Shir Mikvas HaGet, if you left over some of the get, you started writing the 12 lines of the get, you ran out of space, but Kostva B'daf HaSheni, you wrote the rest of it on the second page, meaning not a separate piece of parchment that you sewed together, that would be a second column, rather, right, second column, well, Eidim Milamata, and then the Eidim are at the bottom, kosher, then it's kosher. Which actually, it's not so simple to say that it's kosher. Rabbi Akiva Eger references over here a Tosfos in Sota that asks, why should that be? In Sota, we learned about the Megillah Sota that can't be written on two columns. Why would a get be any different? And therefore, Tosfos mentions the possibility maybe the only psul with a get would maybe both with Megillah Sota and with a get, the psul would only be when it's actually written on two separate pieces of parchment that are sewn together, but not if you write them on two columns. Then Tosfos says, no, maybe there's a difference. By Megillah Sota, it says, the cost of Lark HaKodim, Bas Sefer, implying there has to be one single Sefer, so one single column, as opposed to a get, just a Sefer Krisus. So there you have more latitude. Anyway. Chosmu Eidim B'Rosh HaDaf, if the Eidim sign at the top of the page instead of underneath, Minatzad, or they sign on the side, or Ma'afrav, or on the back of the Get Parshat, this is when we're talking about a Get Parshat, which is supposed to be signed on the front, not on the back, all of those are possible. Incidentally, when we say it's signed on the back, there's a machlokas between the back and the Taz, the father-in-law and the son-in-law, on what this means. Is it we're talking about the whole get is written on the front? What happens if you ran out of space on the front? You wrote the rest of the get on the back of the parchment and then signed underneath.
It doesn't refer to the
Mishnah. Well, the Mishnah is talking about where you wrote one column and then another column, and we're saying, okay. The Mishnah is also talking about you wrote the whole get on the front, you signed on the back. That we know is possible. What if you ran out of space on the front and finished the get on the back and then the Eidim signed on bottom? Do we say that's kosher? Because after all, they are signed at the bottom of the get. Or no, because actually it's worse than having it in two, because the Taz argues it's worse than having it in two columns. Two columns, at least you have the whole thing in front of you. Front and back, you don't. So therefore, the Bach argues that it would be fine, and the Taz argues it wouldn't. Anyway. Hikit Rosh Hashanah Betzad Rosh Hashanah. And what happens if you put the tops of the two gittim together? So in other words, you wrote one get in this direction, you wrote one get in this direction, the other get in this direction, and the signatures are in between. And the Edim are in between, Shneim Sulim, and then both of them are possible. Because, again, the signatures are at the top of the get instead of at the bottom. And Tosfos points out, you don't really need, there's not really a chiddush of that. We already know that if it's at the top, it's possible. Okay, because, Tosfos mentions, first of all, the Gemara is going to talk about different scenarios, how exactly the simas of the Edim are laid out. But besides that, also, Tosfos says, okay, the Mishnah just wants to tell us all the possible scenarios. Sometimes the Mishnah will do that, even when it's obvious, but okay. Sefer Shalzeh, it's not Sefer Shalzeh. What if it's the other way around? You have one get written in this direction, the other written in this direction, and the Edom are signed in between over here. So this one is being read from in this direction, right, and the Edom are in the middle. Esha Edom, it's going to Sefer Kosher. Whichever one the Edom come out of the bottom of is Kosher. In other words, whichever one the Edom's signature is in the same direction as the get.
So the lines go this way.
One get is written like this.
Right.
And the other one is written like this.
Right. Okay.
The signature is over here. Which one? Are the signatures right side up relative to this one or right side up relative to this one?
So the get.
Whichever one.
The direction of the signature has to be the same as the direction.
Yeah. Right. Well, not because it can be written in another language, but at least it has to be not upside down relative to it.
Right.
Yeah,
but why?
Because it has to be underneath it. It has to be under, not that it's at the top of. If the signature is here and the tops of the letters are facing in this direction, then it means it goes with this get. It means that those signatures would be upside down relative to that one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Next, get Shikosta Ivris the Aid of Yvonis. It's a get that was written in Hebrew and the Aidim are signed in Greek. Or Yuvonis the Aid of Ivris, or the other way around, it was written in Greek and signed in Hebrew, or Eidachad Ivriv Eidachad Yuvani, or one Aid signing in Greek in Hebrew and the other one in Greek. And by the way, the Yerushalmi asks an interesting point. Don't the Aidim have to be able to understand the language of the get? We learned earlier in the Sefer, they have to read the get before they sign it. So the Yerushalmi says, we can be talking about over here a case. The Aidim do understand the language, so let's say the get is written in Hebrew, but they don't know how to write in that language. They only know how to sign their names in Greek, but they can read Hebrew and therefore, yeah.
They can read
Hebrew, they just can't write it. Yeah. Okay. Also, Ksav Sofer V'Aid, Kosher. Also, if the get is written by a Sofer and signed by an Aid, then it's Kosher. Again, with a Ksav versus Chasam Sofer that we'll talk about in the Gemara, that we talked about before and we'll talk about again. Ish Pliny Aid Kosher, if you just write the person's name and you write Aid, that's Kosher. Or Ben Ish Pliny Aid Kosher, if you just write his patronymic, that the son of so-and-so is an Aid, is Kosher. Ish Pliny Ben Ish Pliny V'Lekosav Aid Kosher, if you write the full name and the father's name and no word Aid, it's also Kosher. V'chachay in the Kiyah, Adav Shabir Shalayim Osin, and that is what the pure-minded people of Yerushalayim used to do. Rashi says they used to use a Lashon Ksara. They used to try to keep their Lashon brief. So since they didn't need to write the word aid, just writing plenty ben plenty is enough, then they would do that, they wouldn't write the word aid. Kosev chanichosev, a chanichosev kosher. If you wrote their chanicha, or his or her chanicha, then it's kosher. What is chanicha? Rashi says it means basically a last name. And in fact, there's a choice of this elsewhere in Megillah that gives us an example, the name Ebenezer, for example. Ebenezer doesn't mean that his father's name was Ezra. It means some distant ancestor of his was named Ezra. But that's a chanicha.
When you refer to your ancestry?
Not necessarily ancestry, but whatever, a family name, a name that's shared by the whole family. Tosfos over here on Peches talks about that actually there's two different kinds of chanicha for this purpose. There's one for the whole family, and then there's another one which is a nickname for a specific individual. So if you write that, yeah. Tosfos also has the Girsa, by the way, that the Nekiya Adas would do that. Instead of writing their actual names, they would write their chanicha, they would write their family name. Reb Levick has an explanation in Ha'aruch Masechta Gittin, an explanation of Kabbalah, according to the two different explanations, why would the Nekiya Adas do Yerushalayim, what they have against writing the word aid, or what they have against writing their real name. And he has Barichos over there, but the gist of it is that given that a get in many cases is given because we'll learn at the end of the Masechta because of Erev HaTzedakah, when a woman has been acting in an unsneistic fashion. So therefore, if you say like Rashi, they didn't want to put the word aid there, the word aid is related to the word das, as it has the same letters. Dalad Ayin. They didn't want das to be associated with somebody on that level. They didn't want to lower das down to that level, and therefore they prefer to leave out the word aid. And so if you go with Tosfos, that they didn't want to write their real names, and he explains they were tzaddikim, they were great people whose names are in Atzilus. Their nicknames are the lower level. Chanichasa v'achanichasa are things that belong in the Olam HaZeh. So that's something that they could tolerate putting on a get, not their actual names themselves, which belong in Olam HaZeh and not dragged down to that level. Related.
It's only
on a get? We're talking on a get, Kapashta. Our Gemara is talking about a get, but I don't know. Okay, the Gemara says, now, in the first case, when we had a get that's written in two columns, you're saying it's good, but why? What if, don't you have to be concerned that maybe originally there were two gets in here, side by side? It so happens that the part of the get that mentions the date and whatever is exactly opposite the part with the edim. The gazul is mandabastra edim dekama. And then what do? You cut off the bottom half of the first get, the top half of the second get, to make it appear as one big get. And really, it's not that. Really, it's not so. It was two different gifting. Yes, but you're talking about over here actually that there's space at the bottom of the first get. So you know for a fact there can't have been anything else written over there, because you can see there's blank space over there. The Dilma's Mandavastra made his Gazi a fine. Okay, so you took care of that the first get, you know there was nothing else cut off of it. You know that whatever's there is what was there originally.
The one on the right?
The one on the right hand side, fine, you've taken care of that there's space underneath. What about the one on the left? What about if it was originally a get there on the left and you cut off the part of the date? Again, same thing. Okay, if you're saying there's space underneath, you can also say that there's space. You can also say there's space up above.
Left, there was space above.
No, okay, so the thing is like this. Rashi talks about, and Marshall talks about in more detail, why the chalal, why do we think you would cut off one half of the get and the other half of the get anyway? Because if there was a tznayim in the get, we talked before about writing tznayim in get, okay, according to the Rambam, you're not supposed to do that, but according to everybody else, that you can write the tznayim in the actual get. What if there was a tznay there, and then he decides, I don't want that tznay anymore, so he cuts off the part with the tznay, and then that way he has it good. So by saying that there's space on the bottom of the first one, and now we're saying at the top of the second one, we know that there can't have been any such thing. Otherwise, also, I mean, Pnei Yeshua talks about what if you could have, never mind that, what if you had a scenario where, let's say, there was the get, originally only the left-hand get was written, there was a big margin over here, and then somebody went and wrote another get over there, and somebody went and wrote a partial get over there, and then cut off the top part of this one, again, to get rid of any tznai or whatever that was there. So again, by having margins over there, it shows that it's not so. Yeah. Okay, the Dilma imlucha imluch v'kosta. Fine, don't you have another problem? What if the husband originally started writing the get? Then he changed his mind, decided not to divorce her after all, v'kosta, and then he continued writing. So Rashi says what happens is that by doing that, he'll have been mevatel the first half of the get that he wrote. Tosfos says we have the opinion of Reb Nachman earlier in the Masechta that even you mevatel a get, you can still use it afterwards. So what's the problem? He was mevatel it, now he wants to reuse it again. What's the problem? So Tosfos quotes from an interestingly named person named Reb Ezra Hanavi that even Reb Nachman would only say that it's kosher if you wrote the whole get and then mevatel it. If you wrote half a get and then mevatel it, then even Reb Nachman would agree you can't reuse that half a get.
Because
it's not even a complete get yet. Anyway, then there are other Rishonim, the Ramban, the Ram, talk about other possibilities that maybe the vort is, if you told the sofer to write half the get, and then in the middle you mevatel his shlichus, you can't make him a shliach to write half the get. It's an all or nothing thing, shlichus. So therefore, that means, so what are you going to do now? You have, if the original shlichus was canceled, and now you can't have him write another half yet. The answer is the custom, areat melamata or materis melamayla. The scenario that we're saying that would be kosher is if the line itself, areat materis melamayla, which is the central part of the get, itself is at the end of the first column and the beginning of the second. Okay, still a question of Dumi. That's what we're saying. That would be kosher because then we know he didn't change his mind in the middle. still the question is Viduma is Swami late. Still maybe it just so happened that he was in the middle of writing Hareat Matarasalam, then he changed his mind, then afterwards and decided not to write the get after all. Then later on he changed his mind again and decided to continue. Answer is it cool a high life Hashin, and we're not worried to that extent that he should dafka in the middle of writing Hareat Matarasalam all of a sudden change his mind and then change his mind back, that we're not worried about. So as long as we have the margins that we mentioned before to make sure that there weren't originally two gifted side by side, and you have that Hareat Matarasalam for all them is like that, then we know we're good. We've covered all the possibilities.
So we're saying when part of the statement of Matarasalam goes on two pages,
then it's fine. That's the only case there would be, yeah. Because otherwise, yeah.
How would it be otherwise?
Well, because otherwise you might have, let's say, that the dates are over here, and then over here you have somewhere in the middle over here, you have Hareat Matarasalam. Rav Ashi says you don't need all those answers. The idea being misachta the Megillah. Never mind that. You can look at the cloth itself and see the parts around the edges where it was stretched. Namely, Rashi explains when cloth is originally made, when cloth is originally made, it needs to be stretched out. So you tie stones all around it, and then you start scraping it down and doing whatever you need to make it into cloth. Afterwards, you can recognize those parts. Those parts around the edges are thicker, they're darker, they weren't cut off with a razor like they would ordinarily be. So if you see, so never mind a wide margin, if you see that directly below the first half of the get, which is on the first column, you see below that this masakta, this part that you can see clearly was the original edge, and the same thing at the top of the second page, then you know it was originally one get, you know it was originally not two. And then you don't even really have the problem of imlucha imlus that maybe he changed his mind in the middle. There's no reason to think in this case that he would have done that.
If you had two in, you would also see the stretching on both on the top and the bottom.
That's fine, but the point is here we have something which appears to be one get. We want to make sure it's one get and not two. Next, we said if the Egim signs at the top of the page, then it's no good. And we said also if they sign on the side, it's no good. The question is, any, is that so? But our Rav calls them in that side. We find that Rav used to sign on the side of a Pashas of a get. Well, it means, in other words, here's the get, and he would sign along the edge over here. The answer is, Chosim Shigaga Klapiksav. Yes, but what Rav would do is the tops of the letters would face towards the body of the get. So he would write it. In other words, if this is the get, he would be writing downwards like this. So therefore, you can see that belongs to the get.
Like, I am...
No. In other words, he'd turn the page sideways and write. Rather, draw his signature or whatever. Yeah.
As opposed to,
for example, that he would be facing away, that he'd be turning it 90 degrees this way and writing, yeah. Okay, fine. What are you going to do with the next part of the Mishnah continues? Where you had the tops of the two gittim facing each other, where again you had one get written in this direction and the other one written in this direction. And we said the Edim are in the middle, Shneim Sulim, both of them apostle. Why? But left the Hem and I have prophet Kabbalah, let's cash it. Why? Why not see which one the top of the Edim's signature is faced in that direction, and let it be kosher. If you're saying that it's acceptable when the signature goes like this and the tops of the letter is faced in this direction, by the same token, why shouldn't it be fine if the signatures are, let's say even they're upside down relative to this get, but fine, the tops of the letters face in this direction.
This way?
Yeah. The answer is...
Can the line here face this way and the signatures face this way?
I'm not following. If the lines are going, the lines of the get are going like this,
right.
going from the beginning of the page now.
Right.
The signature, Rav's signature, was saying went like this.
Right.
He wrote like this, 20 ben 28.
Right.
Yeah, so that would be fine. But if he wrote in this direction, 20 ben 28, we're saying that wouldn't be good because then that signature doesn't seem to have any connection to the get. Yeah.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, the answer is Hossam de Rami like to Ivra. The answer is that no, you could say that in the case of the two Gittim facing each other, that the reason why it's possible is because the Edim signatures are not in one direction or in the other direction. They're actually like this. They're at a 90-degree angle to both of them, so they don't belong to either one. What about, though, the Mishnah continues, that if you have the beginning of one is next to the actually I skipped this when I was reading the Mishnah. We said the Mishnah had another case, so we had three cases. One is where the tops of the gifted face each other. In other words, this one goes like this, this one goes like this. The other one is the next one is the bottoms of the gifted face each other like this. And the third case, the Mishnah said, which I skipped because my eye skipped it, is you have one get written underneath the other, and the signature is in between. So then it says, Estre'edim nikrin b'seikah kosher. Whichever one the edim are read at the bottom of is kosher. The pasha is the first one because the signatures are in the same direction as it. So the ed rami ki'ivra, if you're going to assume that in all three cases in the Mishnah, the signatures are like this, then how does that work? It's not readable with either one. It doesn't go with one or the other. Why would it be kosher in that case?
When it's vertical to the line.
Ella, so no, you have to answer that no. When we say that Rav would sign on the side, it was not in Gittin. Bidiske habachosim. He would sign like that in shtaris, in letters, actually. Bidiske means letters. Rashi says, for example, when his Beis Din would write people a summons to Beis Din, and he has to sign it, that he would sign on the side. Because there's no akada that has to be dafka at the bottom. But with a get, yes, definitely the signatures have to be on the bottom, and therefore there's no way, therefore we can go back to, in the scenarios we had over here, we can say that the signatures are in the same plane as the get in. We don't have to say that they're going like this. We can say they're going across. But nevertheless, in the first case, they're at the top of both get, and therefore both apostle. In the second case, it's at the bottom of one get, and therefore that get is kosher. And in the third case, also, it's at the bottom of one get, and therefore that get is kosher. We said get your kosher ivris, cholach safsofer of the eighth kosher. We said one scenario with get is kosher is if the sofer wrote it and an eighth signed it. So here comes the thing that we had before. We don't mean that the sofer wrote it and didn't sign it. We mean that he signed it as well.
He wrote and signed it.
Yeah. And Rav Chista says, in that case, that would mean that our Mishnah is according to Rav Yossi. Because we learned before that Rav Yossi holds really like minster on the shliach. You can't tell other people to tell the sofer to write. And we said over there, therefore, that actually, according to Rav Yossi, that's the only reason you have to tell the sofer himself. That's the only reason why this would work. Because if you didn't, we learned a couple of parakim ago that if you say that it's kosher, if omer imru is kosher, if we say that you can tell the edim to tell whatever you tell a couple of people to tell the sofer to write and the edim to sign, what may happen is they may figure, we really were supposed to tell the edim, but we're embarrassed. The sofer is going to think, why don't we want him to sign? Do we think he's possible or something? They're going to let him sign, and it's going to be possible because he wasn't supposed to be given the instructions to. But only if we say it. If we went to the Yossi, only then can we say chasam sofer sheninu.
The other possibility,
we learned over there, we had a couple of possibilities about merely a minister and the shliach, but also what does it mean? There's two different things over there. There's giving a shlichus that consists, there's where the edim themselves, or the shluchim, whatever, were given instructions to write the get, sovu, and they go hand it off to somebody else, where then we had a machlokes about that. And then you also have another case where hachilah, he told them delegate it to somebody else, where then Rav Meir says it's fine, Rav Yossi says it's not, yet. But we also had a machlokes amiroyim about it. Yeah. So the other way of looking at it is that the Mishnah means ksav sofer, literally means the sofer himself just wrote the get. There's only one signature at the bottom of an aid, but the sofer himself, having written it, counts as one aid. That would go more according to the Balazo, that you don't need aid chasima anyway. You only need aid mesira. So therefore, it's not an issue if you have only one signature on it.
But an aid can be a
sofer. A sofer can be an aid. That's yeah. If it weren't for the problem of omer imru, then yeah, that's everybody would. Yeah. There was a certain ksuba one time that was brought before Rav Abba. They recognized the writing of the sofer who had written the body of it, and they recognized one signature of a witness. So Rav Abba thought safe kosher. So Rav Yemi says no, because just like in our Mishnah, you need the sofer. When we say ksav sofer, really means chasam sofer, that the sofer has to actually have signed it in the capacity as an aid, so it has to be by that tzuba as well. That tzuba right now only has one signature on it, therefore no good.
Did he have to write Ed actually?
Yes. Yeah. Well, he has to at least write his name. We said he has to write Tony McClain. He doesn't have to write the word aid, but yeah. Now, Tosfos mentioned it's not so simple. On the face of it, we're saying that the halacha is like Rav Yemi. That's Chassam Sefer Shinin. On the other hand, given that we had the whole machlokes earlier about Oimu Imu, and we said only if you say that Oimu Imu doesn't work, would this Chassam Sefer business work, then it's not so simple. What if you say that we follow the opinions that Oimu Imu is fine? Then you can't have the Sefer sign it. Then you have to have two other Edim sign it. So now the Rambam writes that Oimu Imru is definitely possible with Rabbanon and may even be possible Daraisa. On the other hand, he says like what our Gemara says over here, the Chassam Sefer Be'ed is kosher. How does that fit together? Oimu Imru is where you tell the Shluchim, you tell Pliny to write the get, and you tell Pliny and Pliny to sign it. Where we said, if that's valid, what's going to happen? Instead of telling Pliny and Pliny to sign it, he's saying, tell Reuven to write the get, tell Shimon and Levi to sign it. They may decide on their own, never mind, why should we freeze Reuven out? He's a perfectly kosher aid as well. Instead of bothering Levi, let's just have Reuven write the get, and him and Shimon will sign it. But that's no good, that's not what the husband said to do. If we say that Oimu Imu is no good anyway, that the husband himself has to tell the sofer to write the get, and he himself has to tell the aidim to sign, then there's no potential problem. Everybody knows. Then it's clear who has to be doing the writing and who has to be doing the signing. So how does it fit together? So among others, the Kesef Mishnah, others talk about that the Rambam might agree that even though technically the halacha is like Rabbi Yomi, Chassam Sofer is kosher, nevertheless that's only the Diyadim, because of the Omer Imru problem.
So you
have to have it, the Sofer writes it, and two other Edim sign it. The Diyadim, if you have Chassam Sofer the Eid, good enough.
And would you, for instance, give us a scenario?
A scenario would be, let's say, for example, the husband went off to Medina Sayam and his wife's going to be left in Aguna. Whatever. Then we said in Mishnah that if you wrote his or her chanicha, again, either meaning their family name or their nickname, then it's kosher. So no, chanichas obis begitin an yudoris. A family last name can last for up to 10 generations in a get. Meaning that we learned earlier in the Masechta that you have to write the husband and wife's proper names. If you write a wrong name for them, it's possible. So if you have a nickname, if you have a family name that started 10 generations ago and now you're writing it, then it's still fine. But any more than that, then no, because it wasn't like nowadays where last names persist for hundreds of years. After 10 generations, it's no longer thought of as a family name anymore.
You know, it's a family 10 generations.
People.
If they have the same family more than 10,
so
what's the color?
Lahora, because at that point already it can't be considered definitively their family name anymore. No, but you still could have. That's not the point. The point is, that's fine. They've been using it for 10 generations, but still, in those times, people changed their last names much more fluidly than they do nowadays. Fine, for 10 generations, your family has been known as Evan Ezra. Now you move to another place, nobody's familiar with that name, so you take on a new name, or even you're living in the same place, but whatever, you know, by now, in 10 generations, you have a couple of lowlifes in the family as well, and you're embarrassed of the name, and so you change it, whatever. No, so what?
Change the name a lot.
Yeah, so that's apparently what we're saying. What we're talking about is that 10 generations ago this was the family name. So now, 10 generations later, you're still using it, even though in general you're not known by that in day-to-day use, because it was your family name. But after that, no, maybe that's what it means.
If you move to another town, two people with the same name.
Yeah, then you might take on a new name. Rav Shimon Allah Zayim Gimel Derech. Kosher only for 3 generations. Kosher Mitan Ve'elach Fossil, after that it's fossil.
I like it.
Okay. Incidentally, by the way, the Korban Nassanov gives an interesting possibility. He says that Chanichoso can also include, when we say Chanichoso, one way of looking at it is we're talking about you write their actual name, but then you write the family name as well in order to make it clear who this is. Like we learned about before, if you have 2 Yosef and Shimon in town, you might write the Chanicha or whatever in order to clarify things. The Korban Nassanov talks about the possibility. Maybe even you could write just the last name. without even the first name. You just write that. You just write that that you just write that I don't know, Goldberg divorced Goldberg divorced Silverberg or whatever, you know. You'll need Ada Vasira in order to know which Goldberg and which Silverberg, but yeah. Who does it go like a price that Rav Chanina says that you can write the Chanichas Ovis, the family name, for up to three generations? Come on, Rav Shimon Elazar. That would be according to Rav Shimon Elazar, who limits it to only three generations, because he said according to the Tanakhama, you could go up till 10 generations.
So this name, the Chanicha, is like a patronymic?
It could be a patronymic, no, but it started as a patronymic. Like Eben Ezra, for example, it started as a patronymic. There was once an Ezra who had children, but by now his family, generations later, are still using the name Eben Ezra, even though their own father's name is not Ezra. Amar Avon Micro, what's the pasuk that expresses that idea that up to three generations is considered one thing, and after that it's already like old, outdated? The pasuk is Kisur the Bonim of Nevonim and Eshantim. When you have children and grandchildren and you become old, in Eretz Yisrael, so we see already after three generations it's old, it's outdated. So maybe that shows that we are talking about a name that's no longer being used. So up to three generations, you can still revive it for purposes of a get, but not after that. Maybe that's what I mean. Yeah. Speaking of that pasuk of living long in it, actually, I mean, I don't know. I mean, practically speaking, I don't know that you write a chamicha in a get at all. But okay, maybe.
You write Yosef
and Shimon. You don't usually write last names. You write their name and you write any nicknames that they're known by.
So
you write that as well, but you don't only write it. You write, for example, Yosef Demiskui James, let's say, or whatever. But you don't only write James, and you certainly don't write only Goldberg. Yeah. Speaking of this pasuk about living a long time in Eretz Yisrael, and getting comfortable over there, and the pasuk continues, you end up worshiping Avodah Zarah. A little agadah on that. Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Loi Chorva Eretz Yisrael Achal Gibba Zayin Bote Dinim Avodah Zarah. Eretz Yisrael was not destroyed until seven Bote Dinim, meaning seven dynasties together with their associated Bote Dinim, had served Avodah Zarah. Ve'elohen, Yeravam ben Nevat, Basha ben Achia, each one of them had a dynasty, a shorter or long one. Yeravam had him and his son, Basha had him and his son, Achav ben Omri, he was actually the second one in his dynasty. His father Omri started it, but Achav was the biggest Rasha in that dynasty, so the whole thing is blamed on him. V'yehu ben Nimshi, who had four generations, of Pekach ben Ramayahu, Menachem ben Gadi, actually Menachem is really supposed to be before Pekach, V'Hoshea ben Elam. They were the seven royal families of the Aseret HaShavatim. Rashi points out there were a couple of other ones stuck in there also. There was Zimri and Shalom ben Yavish, but they're not counted because none of them ruled for a full year. They were only counting ones where they or their whole dynasty ruled for a year or more. Shenemar, the pasuk says in Yirmiyah, Lala Yeledes Hashiva, the one who gave birth to seven is miserable. Nafcha Napsha, she's disappointed. Ba Shimsha Ba'od Yomam, her son has set while it's still daytime. Boisha V'chofra, she's embarrassed and ashamed. So we see that they Yoledes Hashiva, she gave birth to seven families, and their Bati Dinim who worship at Avodah Zarah, one after the other, and therefore that was the end of it. Umlala, they're she's miserable, and they're gone. Tosfos points out that actually you see this business of seven Bati Dinim from the pasuk Kisolid Banim of Nevanim as well. Tosfos learns Kisolid means you have one generation of children, Banim is another two, Bnei Banim is another four. So there's your seven. Marshall says you don't need that. What the pasuk is saying is that while it was still day, in other words, there should have been more of a future for the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, but all of a sudden there's sunset. They were destroyed. Why? Because the Yoledes Hashiva, because there were these seven families. Rashi also adds, by the way, I mean, the kings of Yehuda who also worship the Avodah Zarah, they're not counted as separately because they were in the same period as all of these seven ones from the Aseret HaShavatim. Omer Abami, Mikro, Kisur Lebonim of Nevonim. You see from this pasuk Kisur Lebonim of Nevonim that eventually you get antiquated in Eretz Yisrael and you start worshiping the Avodah Zarah and then the trouble comes. We read it on Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av. It's in Parshas Vayechanan. speaking of this, now you have a pasuk about Hashem ben Ela, the last king of the Ten Shvatim. It says on him, "Vayasar Abba Eini Hashem Rak Loi Kamalcha Yisrael." He did evil in the eyes of Hashem, but not like the Malcha Yisrael who were before him. And then the next pasuk, well, that's what we're going to say. Uchtiv, and then the pasuk continues, "Olav Shamanezer." Remember that Shamanezer, the king of Asher, came up against him and conquered him and took all the people into Golos. So what is it, fair? He's better than all the Malchei Yisrael before him, and all of a sudden in his time comes the invasion. He answers them, Rav answers Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, what happened is, the guards that Yerovam had set up when he became king 200 odd years earlier, when he started the kingdom of the Efes Shvatim, he put up guards that he set up on the roads. Those Jewish people should not be able to be on the regular. Yeah, we talked about it in Kainis. This Hoshea, the last king over there, came and was Mavato then. So in that sense, he did Harabah and Hashem, he still worshipped the Rezor. Rak loyt Malchi Yisrael, but he wasn't like the Malchi Yisrael who prevented the people from being on the regular. He was bad like the other Malchi Yehuda who were bad. They worship at Rezor, but they didn't, the Malchi Yehuda never prevented people from going to the Bismikr. So he did the same thing. So what happened? The Apple Pete came, like all these Yisrael Eregel. Nevertheless, the Jewish people did not start going and being Eregel.
Without being prevented.
They didn't. In fact, the Pasuk and then Divrei Yomim tells us that Chizkiah, who became king of Yehuda around that time, sent messengers to whoever was left in the Aseret HaShavatim, inviting them to come to Yerushalayim for Pesach, and a lot of them made fun of him. Some of them. Yeah, that's the thing. After many generations of not being used to it, yeah. So, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ois and Shonish, Aliyah Yisrael L'Regel, those years that the Jewish people did not go on Aliyah L'Regel, Yelchu B'Shevi, they'll go into captivity instead of that. So that's the connection. In other words, that Hashem ben Ela was not as bad as the other kings. He took away the prizoid, but now the Medrash puts it that actually what it is up until now, the fault rested on the kings. Now the fault rests on the whole people, and therefore all of Allah Shalom Eli.
How long did they say, Shri?
Well, so Ben Yehoyada says that on the face of it, I mean, the Shvi, the Aseret HaShavatim has lasted a heck of a lot longer than they were in early Regel. He says we find that Yirmiyahu brought a lot of them back some 100 years later. So yes, you have that the correspondence, the amount of time they didn't go on early Regel is the amount of time that the bulk of them stayed in Golos. No, there were a lot more than 7. No, 100 years or so. Yes. Amr of Chista, Amr Maruch, Rav Amilo, Amr of Chista, Amr of Yirmiyah, Dorash Maremer. Maremar gave a drasha as follows. What does it mean? It says Hashem hastened, Vayishkod in the Lashon Shaked, like an almond tree that blossoms very quickly. The Eivishter hastened the evil, Vayivyer Aleinu, this is part of the Neil's Tila to the Eivishter, Vayivyer Aleinu, and he brought it on us, Kitzadik Hashem Aleinu, because Hashem is righteous. What do you mean? Because Hashem is a tzaddik, he brought the punishment on us faster. Ella, Daka also Hakadosh Baruch Hu in Yisrael. It means the Eivishter did a favor to the Jewish people. Shehegla Golus Tzidkiyahu Vadayin Golus Yichon Yekayemes. That he brought about the Golus of Tzidkiyahu, which was the last king of Yehuda, when the Mishmetz was destroyed. He made that Golus happen while the Golus of Yechonia was still living in Babel. Because what's special about the Golus of Yechonia? Not overlap, but they're only 11 years apart. Because by Golos Yechonia it says that they were Hachorosh v'hamaskim elef. Literally, Hachorosh v'hamaskim means the carpenters and the locksmiths. There were 1,000 of them. But the Gemara explains, Chorosh, they're called Chorosh, b'shosh poischin nasu akov v'cheshin. When they opened up a discussion in Torah, everybody else became like a cheresh, like a deaf mute, like they couldn't speak because they're overawed by what they're saying. Or other Mephoroshim say that actually what it is it means like everybody else was deaf in the sense that it was like they hadn't even heard because they couldn't even understand the depth of what these people are saying.
Because they were such great Tamar Chachamim.
And Maskir, they're called Maskir, Kivin Shogun, Shuvin, and Postin. Once they finished off a topic, then nobody else would start it up. Rashi says it means if they didn't know the answer to something, nobody else would have a chance of figuring out the answer either. Other Mephoroshim say it also means if they finished off a topic, they came to a decision, nobody else is going to reopen it for discussion. It's a closed matter. We now know the halacha, we now know the explanation.
So
these were the great Tamar Chachamim, in other words, that were taken in Golos together with Yechonia.
You know, what's the name?
Chorosh v'hamaskir, they're called over here in the Pasuk.
We don't know their names.
No, we don't know their individual names. I mean, we know a couple of names. For example, Daniel was one of them. It seems Mordechai, we say in the Megillah, Asher Hoglom Yerushalayim Yimagol Asher Yichonya Melech Yehuda. So he was part of that Golos. V'kama Elef, and how many of them were there? The Pasuk says 1,000. So the point is, in other words, like this. Golos Yechonia included these 1,000 tremendous Talmid Chachamim. So they went to Babel, they opened up yeshivas, they opened up shuls, they set up a whole Jewish infrastructure over there. What would have happened now? The people who were left in Yerushalayim at Tzidkiyahu mostly were the Rishayim. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that you had, in the times of Yehoyakim, who was the king before Yechonia, he was Yechonia's father, the people were, many of the people were tzaddikim, but the king was an out-and-out Rasha. Yehoyakim was one of the worst Rishayim among the kings of Yehuda. On the other hand, for Rabbi Lazara and all kinds of things, the Gemara says all kinds of terrible things he did. Tzidkiyahu was the other way around. He personally was a tzaddik, but his subjects were mostly Rishayim. So the vote is, therefore, had the Golos of Tzidkiyahu been, 30, 40, 50 years or whatever after Golos Yechonia, by that time they would have all passed away. They come to Babel, there wouldn't be anything left. Like this, they came when Golos, only 11 years after Golos Yechonia, everything is still flourishing, and therefore they have from whom to learn and whom to follow in setting back up an environment of Torah.
That's the
production. Ula says there's another meaning of it also. It means the Eibishter brought the Golos 2 years before the deadline of Bnei Shantem. He said that Bonim of Nebonim, he said when you have children and children's children, Bnei Shantem, and you become old in Eretz Yisrael, and you start worshipping Avodah Zarah. The word Bnei Shantem has a gematria 852. Now, from when the Yidden came, from Yitzias Mitzrayim until the Churban Bayis Rishon works out like this, 40 years in the desert, 440 years till the Bayis Rishon was built, 410 years of the Bayis Rishon. That makes 850. Where's the missing 2 years? That's the tzedakah. Because what does the pasuk say? That the pasuk continues, ki sodat bonim of nevonim b'nei shantem, you're going to worship over the Zara. The pasuk continues, ki gabti lachem ayem ki obed teved, you're going to be completely destroyed. So by bringing the Golos 2 years earlier, the Eibishter made it that way. Their sa'ah is not filled up, their measure of Avedas is not filled up, therefore they don't have to be completely wiped out. And after that, for 2 years, we see by Sarah that 1 year was enough. But actually, there's an interesting thing brought from the Lechet Yosher. He brings from his Rebbe, who was the name escapes me right now. His Rebbe, the Trumas Adeshin was his Rebbe. He says there's a well-known thing in gematrios that a one-off is not an issue. You can have a gematria one-off, and it's still considered a valid gematria. Where do we see that? From our Gemara. The Eibishter couldn't let them be in Eretz Yisrael for 851 years, because that would still be close enough to the gematria of Neshantim, that then it would trigger the Kiyavet Tevedun. By making 850, taking off 2 years, it's not the same gematria anymore, therefore that meant there's still room for Rachmanus. So that was the tzedakah. The Eibishter brought the Golos 2 years earlier than by rights it should have been. And the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rabacha by Yaakov. Shmamino. We see from this Mehera, the More Alma, that when the Eibishter says something is going to happen quickly, Kiyavet Tevedun Maher. It means, Shmanime, Vacham Shem Tzavti, it means 852 years. Because you see, the Eibishter is saying it's going to happen quickly, and yet look how long it took. Yeah. Now, Tosva says, by the way, I'm already mean, were they worshipping up at the Zohar those whole 850 years? Tosva says, actually, yeah, they had Pesel Micha with them from the beginning. Pesel Micha, where the Micha's idol, when it went out of Mitzrayim with them. It's
852 years?
No, not that they didn't know, but originally they had Pesel Micha, and later on after that was gone, there was a constant tendency towards the Avodah Zarah, off and on, during all that period. The Chassam Sofer, I think it is, mentions an interesting verse based on this Gemara. He says, in many tefillos, we say, when we ask the Mashiach, we ask for the rebuilding of this message, we don't just say Bimhera, we say Bimhera v'yameinu. Sometimes even Meheira v'Yemeinu v'Karev. Why? Because our Gemara is saying the Eibishter's Meheira can be a long time. We don't want the Eibishter's Meheira. We want our Meheira.
Yeah.
850. Not familiar with that, but now. I don't think I've ever heard of it. That's the thing. On the face of it, yeah. Actually, I mean, there's a bunch of achronim that have a problem with Tosfos that have to try to understand what Tosfos is talking about, what Tosfos' issue with it is. One thing is that when the Gemara is mentioning over here now in the pasuk in Eshantim, it doesn't say Mehera, it says Maher, whereas the Gemara is mentioning over here Mehera. So that leads. Yeshua, I think, and others to say that we're talking about two different psukim. There's the Bnei Shantem, and then Ki Ovid Tevedun Maher, where then the Eibishter waited 850 years, because Bnei Shantem. But then you have, in Trishma, we say Vavatam Mehera, there's no time limit given over there, and yet we see the Eibishter was willing to wait 850 years. Okay. Should we wait? I guess let's wait for my open.